Kenny Ortega, are you there?
Yes.
Fantastic. Modern technology. So how's the weather down there in Encinitas today?
Oh, it's very nice. It's about 70 degrees here. Yeah.
70 degrees. Wow. Are there good waves out there in the Pacific?
Oh, yeah, they're there, but I'm not getting in them yet.
When did you move to Encinitas?
In 1974.
Is that when the work in L.A. dried up on the telephone, on the television?
It was kind of drying up a little bit, and I just kind of wanted to get out of the scene over there. So it's been working out very well all the last, been over 40 years. Yeah, it's been working real good. Not all the time, but it worked out, you know, great in the long run. And in the meantime, things in Los Angeles have gotten more, not as good as it used to be, to put it that way, you know. So I'm happy here. Working every Sunday jam session as long as I want it, from 6 to 10. So that's good enough for me.
That's at Mr. Peabody's?
At Mr. Peabody's, yeah. And I have been called on some recordings to go in once in a blue moon in L.A., but my home base is here, and very nice. Yeah.
You know, Anthony, we were just listening to your 1956 Batman's Blues. Would you tell us the story of how you became Batman?
Well, I think that revolves around playing all these difficult, uncertain notes that come around, you know. And so, you know, very quickly here and there, unexpected notes coming out. And so I guess that's how it kind of came about, you know.
Who gave you the name?
Quincy Jones.
And that was way before it was on television. That was more comic book.
Oh yeah. It was a long time ago with Lionel Hampton, when I was traveling with Lionel Hampton, and I joined the band in 1952 and stayed with them till 1954, and I met my wife in Norway in 1954, and we got married then, and this and that and the other. So, let's see what else.
On Batman, do you play the solos on the flute, the clarinet, and the tenor?
Yes.
Because there's a guy named John Hafer on tenor in the section.
Like when we're playing four for a little while, that's basically all that is, you know. Where it goes, that's what you're talking about.
Yeah.
When I play in that one there, I play all the instruments like alto, tenor, flute, and clarinet. I've been so long, I can't quite remember. But then. I've done about 13 albums all together. The first one was on Advantage label, the 10-inch album, 1954. I can't recall the.
A Man and His Horns. No, that was.
A Man and His Horns. That was done in 1955. Yeah, in New York. The first one. Well, yeah. Anyway, yeah. I got them kind of mixed up here. Man and His Horns.
That was 1961, actually.
When I overdubbed the different horns into a sax section, and the arrangements were done by Nat Pierce, which he wasn't given the credit for whatever reason on the album, but he did the arrangements. But I did all the horn parts on that one.
Is John Hafer, is he related to Dick Hafer?
He is Dick Hafer.
Oh, this he is related.
I don't know how those names got mixed up, but that's his real name, John Hafer, but he went by Dick Hafer, so maybe it was his middle name, I guess. I don't know, you know. And so anyway, I've got like 13 albums that have been recorded, Man and His Horns, A New Dance, Anthony Ortega on Evidence from France, and Neuf, N-E-U-F-F, in France on the Evidence label, Scattered Clouds in France, and Scattered Clouds.
Scattered Clouds, you recorded that in Van Nuys.
Van Nuys, that's right. California Collective, that's one that didn't do much, but that was with a guy named Kent Glenn, piano player. And then Seven Standards and a Blues, it was Cherry Bruno, 1992. And Earth Dance, Bonjour, 1994. Afternoon in Paris, 2007. Rain Dance, where Mona, my wife's playing vibes. And Adelanto, she plays piano on Adelanto. And that's where I'm playing the electrical things with amps. For a while, then that thing was an end thing on the saxophone, and they hook it up to an amplifier. You know, that was a thing in those days for a while.
the Echoplex.
Yeah, Echoplex, stuff like that. Yeah.
Do you still carry all these horns to Mr. Peabody's?
Well, I carry the alto and tenor, and flute and soprano. That's what I carry now. I don't have any electrical devices now at this point anymore. I just play through the amp, through the microphone, you know. Mm-hmm. And I also sing a few numbers, you know. I figured, in the back of my mind, I remember, well, you know, the singers always get all the credit, and the instrumentalists get the credit way later on down the line. So I said, well, I've heard some voices that really ain't that great. So I said, well, I can sing that good or whatever. And so I sing like the Can't Get Started in My Own Way, and then I scat a few things, like I do that Miles Davis for, like, doo-dap, 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 and then do it, and then I jam on it, and so on like that, you know. And then, sing a couple of ballads, I Can't Get Started, and a couple of other ones that I can't quite recall at the moment. But anyway, I figured, yeah, well, man, I can do some of that, you know. And then the people are more like, oh boy, like they dig it more, you know. They give you more credit. So that's kind of cool, I think, you know.
Lee Konitz is singing now, doing exactly what you're just saying.
I didn't know that. Yeah, man, that's great.
It's the new thing.
Yeah. Well, that's it. The vocalists get the credit, you know.
Speaking of bebop, by the time you and Mona moved to New York City in 1955, and you were there just for 3 years.
Almost 3 years, yeah.
But by the time you got there, Bird was already gone.
Bird was gone, that's right.
And then by the times you probably could have seen him before that was when you were in the Army, like 19... When were you in the Army?
And from 48 to 52, 48 to 50, 3 years it was, from 52, something like that.
That might have made it hard for you to see Charlie Parker as well. Did you ever catch him?
Well, I did catch him. When I was on a furlough once, when I was stationed in San Antonio in the Army, I went to New York on a furlough, and I did get to hear him and see him and Dizzy and them, you know. But that's the only time that I got to hear him or see him in person, you know.
Where did you see it? Where was that at?
At the Birdland. At Birdland, yeah. Huh. Way later, man, when we moved to New York, I ended up being doing the Monday jam sessions there. I was in charge of the jam sessions there. The owner that he liked me, and so anyway, that was pretty nice, man. And I worked there with with Maynard Ferguson also, you know, so that's how I got to know the manager over there and traveled with him for with Maynard Ferguson for a while. Did one album with him.
Yeah.
Boy with Lots of Brass or whatever, you know. But
you know, this corroborates, you know, Buell Neinlinger, the bass player? He was an L.A. session bass player, jazz guy, Buell Neinlinger, but he grew up in New York. He said he remembers sitting in the bleachers at Birdland on Monday nights and caught you there.
Oh, I think I know who you're talking about. Yeah, I never did. I don't think I played with him that I remember. But there was another guy that, same thing, he saw me in Birdland. A long time ago, you know, and
Buell said he never forgot it. And also great. Bobby Shue says to say hi. He lives out here.
Oh, Bobby Shue, yeah, man. All right, man. Yeah. So yeah, like I've been through the mail, so to speak. And anyway, I'm very content here. Like just doing my jazz session on Sundays and just. Kind of kicking back, and anyway, that's about the size of it, you know.
I got a question for you about Gerald Wilson's band. Were you familiar with the you know the tune Lately? You played on that. It was a tune by the trombonist Lester Robertson.
Oh, Lately, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, Lately. Yeah. I remember that.
I heard that it was titled that because Lester Robertson had issues with punctuality.
Well, you know, I don't really know the story behind it, but it was a good tune, yeah. We used to play it all the time in the band there, yeah.
I think that became his nickname. They called Lester Robertson Lately. So.
Oh, yeah, man. All right, yeah. Yeah, Gerald, I did a lot of gigs with Gerald, like the Lighthouse and all over. We traveled to where was it? Salt Lake City. We played there in Salt Lake City. And anyway, that was a wonderful guy, man. Great writer and easygoing. And if when the gig was happening, if somebody was late, you know, he wouldn't make a big thing out of it. He would just go ahead and go to head start with whoever wasn't there, and then little by little, like whoever was late, or not that happened that often, but he was so relaxed but yet on top of things, as once they got going, he was into it, like conducting, and he put his body into it, you know. I learned a lot from just watching him, you know, and I do a little of that stuff myself when I'm leading something, you know, like get into the act of the music, you know, and to give the guys credit and to make a thing out of it, you know.
Yeah, it's kind of like a 1930s version of conducting. I've seen him conduct many times.
I guess, yeah, I would say so. Yeah, I didn't think of it that way, but that could be, yeah.
And man. The only time I ever caught you is with Gerald Wilson. The orchestra.
Oh, wow. It worked. You remember where?
For the Ford Anson Theater.
Oh, yeah. Jiminy, yeah. Boy, he was something else, man.
Yeah.
His arrangements and the way he used to conduct, too, you know. Yeah, and he had some, a lot of good players.
Yeah.
Harold Land, Teddy Edwards. Yeah.
Dennis Budimer.
Kinds of guys, man.
You know,
those were the days.
You know, when you were in Paris, you guys stayed in Paris. You were on tour in 1953 with the Lionel Hampton Orchestra. This is right after you got out of the army, and
right.
Clifford Brown and G.G. Grice were in the group. But you seem to have stayed in Paris for 2 months. October and September. October and September. Well, the recording sessions those secretive recording sessions where you'd go out at night.
That's right. We used to go out at night, like when everything was like over with. And well, Hemp didn't want any of the guys recording for the labels there, like, because, you know, he figured over there, and if we wanted to record it, we'd go on there on our own or whatever. He thought it wasn't really him that much. It was his wife, Gladys. She was the manager, you know, and she was pretty strict, you know. So that was the story there.
I mean, I don't know. That doesn't seem unethical to me that you guys were going out recording on the side.
No, it wasn't, you know, but she was pretty hardcore, you know. She used to run this, she used to run Hamp, put it that way. She was like the boss, you know. But, of course, he was the front showman and the band leader and everybody loved him the way he handled things on the stage, you know. But yeah, it was quite an adventure. I'll say that much. Yeah.
You know, you could, Anthony Ortega, you could answer a question here that discographers have been dealing with for a while. We're pretty sure that's you, alto solo on that Paris session with Gigi Grice and Clifford Brown, where you take the solo on "Keeping Up with Jonesy."
You know, I can't recall that, Keeping Up with Jonesy. I'm not sure. Is there a picture of me there or somebody or something?
Well, you're listed in the credits.
Well, I guess I was there. I guess it was me. I can't recall that.
They're just not sure who, you know, because Gigi Grice was there also. And so for years, we've always said Gigi Grice. But in recent times, a few discographer historians have stepped forward and said, no, that's obviously Anthony Ortega.
I see. Well, that's what they say. I guess it is. Because we both had very different styles. So I guess if they figured it was me, I guess it was. I don't know. You know. Wow.
How did you like that pianist, Henry Renaud?
What's that?
The pianist on those Paris sessions, it was a guy named Henry Renaud.
That's right. Yeah.
He sounds really nice.
Yeah. Henri, whatever.
Did you know Frank Zappa, or was that just a call you got one day?
Yeah. I rehearsed with him and did an album with him.
Grand Wazoo.
Grand Wazoo, that's right. Yeah, I did an album with him. And then he was getting ready to go to overseas. I forget where he was going, but just at that was 1972, and just at that time, I happened to get a TV show with Nelson Riddle, the Julie Andrews show. So I didn't want to pass that up, so I couldn't go with Zappa to I believe it was Germany. I forget where he was going. But I had to bow up, but I wished I could have gone. But anyway, that's when I started getting busy in the studios. And so everything happened at once, you know. But anyway, that's the way that was. But Frank Zappa, he was a genius, man. When I got called to go rehearse with him, and paid rehearsals. And I thought to myself, oh, man, this is going to be a piece of cake. You're getting paid to play to rehearse a little rock and roll. I thought it was just going to be like Simple Simon. Man, when I got there, he wanted me to play clarinet, and I saw that part. I couldn't believe it. All this 32nd note, 16th notes, and all that. I said, oh, man, what is this, you know? And so, man, I was super, super surprised and had so much more respect for him after that. Boy, he was quite a guy. Frank Zappa, yeah.
Did you play the bass clarinet?
Yeah, bass clarinet and the regular clarinet, yeah. The B-flat clarinet, yeah.
Because you're on two tracks. Is that the only instrument you played?
Yeah, it's the only instrument I played on with him, yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Was it overdubs, or did you guys all shoot it down on one together?
You know, it was all down just at one time. That was it. There were no overdubs. Yeah.
Wow, no overdubs.
No, that was it. Yeah.
Did you know you must have knew Vi Red?
Vi Red, yeah, I knew her. I didn't know her that well. Elvira, yeah. I didn't really know her that well. She would come in around to the jam sessions there on Central Avenue and to sit in over there. I was a teenager at the time when Dexter Gordon and Wardell Gray and used to have these jam sessions on Central Avenue, and not that far from Watts, where I lived in Watts. But anyway, yeah, I used to see her around there, and she was quite a little alto player, yeah. I can't remember if she sang or not, too. That's so many years ago. But I don't know if she's even still around. I guess she is. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. She is. There's another alto player, a guy named Earl Anderza, that was around L.A. back then. I wondered if you knew him.
And what's the last name again?
Anderza.
Yeah. I remember him, yeah. I just in passing, I didn't see him hardly much, you know. But yeah.
So what were the television shows? You were on Tony Orlando and Don at the end there?
Yeah, at the end there. And the Julie Andrews show and Bobby Darin show, but that didn't last very long. Bobby Darin and can't quite recall the other one. Maybe that was it. I don't know. But one of the things I really feel good about is that I played on that soundtrack of Unmarried Woman with Bill Conti, and like playing the tenor solos there. And also, I played alto on his movie on Bad Boys. There was two Bad Boys movies. The one that I played on was starring Sean Penn, but you don't hardly ever see that one, you know. But in fact, you don't see Unmarried Woman not hardly either. I don't imagine, but I got featured on that pretty much with the melody and stuff like that, you know.
You know. In your new, I'm dying to know the story behind when you were in New York. You worked with Wingy Minone.
Yeah, I played with Wingy Minone. I worked with him. What happened at the time? I was doing some recordings with Nat Pierce's band, and then Nat Pierce was recording with Sonny Lester or something like that. I can't remember his last name. I think it was Lester. Anyway, he called me and says, "Tony, can you play Dixieland?" I said, "Yeah, you know, I figured you wanted me to play on that or something, you know." And he said, "Yeah, well, I've got a session here with Wingy Minone." So I said, "Yeah." So I showed up over there, and it was in the winter time, and I was wearing like one of those hats like the guys who work in the snow was wearing. And then Wingy Minone looked over and said, "Where'd this Indian come from?" And I said, "Oh, man," you know, like to myself, "Well, you know, like, screw you." I didn't say it to him. I just, you know, figured, like, "Well, man, what kind of shit is this, you know?" it was okay. Like, it was an off-the-wall recording, you know. Wingy on the Wound or something. I forget the title of the album.
So you didn't do any jobs with him. You just did that recording session.
Yeah, just that recording. That's all I did with him. Yeah. Huh. So he was a strange guy, but you know, he was from a complete different era, you know, and I'd say, well, you know, I figured if they wanted Dixieland, I could do that, you know, but of course, I was in a different zone, but it still came out okay, you know. Trumpet on the Wing, that was the name of the album, yeah.
That's
Trumpet
right.
on the Wing,
did
yeah.
What work did you do with saxophonist Hal McCusick?
Well, Hal McCusick, I just did some overdubs with him at one time. And when I was in the Army, I forgot his name, the band leader. He came to San Antonio, Texas, and we went to go see him. And Hal McCusick was playing in the band.
Boyd Rayburn.
And I got one of the guys in the band, in the Army band there, was talking to one of the guys who played with the band. I can't remember the name of the band.
Boyd Rayburn. Boyd Rayburn.
No, it wasn't Boyd Rayburn. It was another guy.
There's a photograph of you and Hal sitting in the saxophone section with Boyd Rayburn.
That's right. Well, maybe it was Boyd Rayburn. But anyway, the point is that that's when I first met Hal Mikusic, and because the alto player, they were on tour, and he was sick or something. He couldn't make the job, and so these people in the band heard of me through one of the army guys that had seen them before, that I was stationed in San Antonio. So I ended up playing on the job. And there's a picture of me there with Dick Hafer. Is that the one you're talking about?
The one I'm talking about has it's you and Hal.
Yeah. Okay. I can't recall that one. But so I had a couple of things with Hal. That one and the thing with Dick Hafer. It's been so long. I can't quite recall. But
and the Dinah Washington. Yeah. You did a Dinah Washington session with Hal.
Yeah. That's right. I did that, yeah. And I've been doing a lot of stuff. It's hard to remember all this stuff. And then, there was the struggling times when I first got to New York. I was working in a strip club there playing like a three-hour set, 2 3-hour sets, 6 hours, you know, straight, no break, for the strippers, and one gig, like I did two gigs there, like the 3 hours, and then I did another 3 hours, like, and then it paid about $30 a night or $60 a night by the time, you know, it wasn't much to pay, but was struggling at the time. When I first got to New York, I was delivering pamphlets, and I gave some blood for $5 or something, you know, just to pay the little rent. I had a little room there for $11 a week before, and then my wife and kid were back in when El Monte with my mother. I was just there alone for a while. And then little by little, things picked up, and then Joe Burnett, the trumpet player that I knew in the Fourth Army Band, he heard that I was there, and he was working with Maynard Ferguson at the time. So he recommended me to Maynard. So Maynard had made some auditions with some different guys. So he picked me, and so that's how that panned out, working with Maynard for a while. And so then things really picked up. We got to move to a nice apartment in Long Island, and so things started to pick up then, and started doing different sessions there downtown, and so things got pretty good. And then I did a couple of things with Neil Hefke, and then I told Neil Hefke that, I'm going to move to L.A. now, because he had a thing he wanted me to be on. I said, well, I'm going to move to L.A. now because I miss Los Angeles and I want to get back. He said, what are you going to do out there, pick oranges? You know, like what's going on out there? And I said, well, I just want to leave. And so I left. But then later on, Neil Hefke, a lot of those guys thought I was crazy because I was leaving. Later on, they all moved to L.A. too. So anyway, it's funny, you know, but that's the way that worked.
Anthony Ortega, the clock has caught up with us. My goodness.
Is that right? Wow, yeah, man. Just getting warmed up. Oh, well.
I know.
Okay, well, so great to talk to you, and I hope the people enjoyed the little conversation here, and keep on listening to your program.